like to call the meeting of the Senate Finance Committee to order. I'm just chairing temporarily until Senator Roblin can get here. My understanding is she is delayed on the road. We will start this morning with Senator Hand, Senate File 32. Senator Hand.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for hearing the bill that we have here, Senate File 32. I do have some people to join me in presenting the bill. What I'd like to do is perhaps just give you a brief description of what the bill does, and then ask our John Tyler and some of the others to maybe provide a little more detail. Senate File 32, we're calling it Healthy Minnesota Contribution Plan. This is a change to the Minnesota Care program that we've had in Minnesota for some time to provide health insurance for lower-income Minnesotans. It does represent a departure in philosophy, I guess, would be one way to put it, from what the Minnesota Care program has done in the past. Essentially, the structure of the bill is provide an opportunity for those who qualify, and what we're specifying is that this bill would only apply to those who qualify for Minnesota Care and who are single adults without children. And the reason for that is that the Medicaid provisions, federal Medicaid provisions, apply to other recipients of Minnesota Care. And given the structure of our bill, without a waiver from the federal government, we could not have the provisions in our bill apply to the other people who participate in Minnesota Care, although there is a portion of the bill that does ask for a federal waiver to allow that to occur. But at this point, and the fiscal note does not assume that we will have that, and so this only applies to the 15,000 single adults without children. And what the structure of the bill does, you can see on page two, starting about line 2.19, is a chart that shows what the defined contribution would be to people who would qualify under this plan. And it is an amount that is variable by age, and there are also provisions in the paragraph above that chart that talks about a sliding scale description based on income. And the idea would be to provide people who qualify under this plan with a fixed amount of money that they would then take to the private insurance markets to purchase a private insurance plan. That is essentially the concept. There are some the description of the bill provides for from this base contribution an increase for people on the lower end of the income scale. On the upper end of the income scale, it is slightly less than the base contribution. Again, the idea is to provide a fixed amount to people who qualify to help them buy insurance, but there's also an assumption that individuals are going to be using some of their own money. Currently, under Minnesota Care, people do pay a premium, a portion of their health care costs under Minnesota Care. We are assuming that is going to continue. And so what we're trying to do is allow flexibility for recipients to choose a plan that is right for them and with some help from the state. I do want to make a brief comment about the direction of this bill compared to Minnesota Care. What you have in Minnesota Care is a structure that provides a lot of coverage at the lower end of the cost scale, if you will. A lot of the things, there's a defined benefit set for Minnesota Care recipients that say you have these coverages, there might be a lot of preventive care, there might be clinic visits and so forth, and those are covered pretty completely under Minnesota Care. The danger that we see, or the problem that we see, is that for a person on Minnesota Care who ends up with a major medical problem, ends up in the hospital, the upper limit for coverage under Minnesota Care is $10,000. And so the premium cost to the taxpayers of Minnesota to provide this coverage is pretty high. I believe it's around $6,000 a year per person, and the maximum benefit is $10,000. And if you're in the hospital for more than, 10 minutes or a day, maybe 2 days, but you can go through $10,000 pretty quickly. And so there's a high risk and a lot of exposure to individuals as well as to providers and hospitals for people who are low income and end up with a significant medical problem. What our structure would do is assume that there will be some costs that are borne by individuals at the lower end, perhaps may even be slightly more than they're bearing under the Minnesota Care structure, that would be pretty much up to the decision of the person who buys the policy. But at the upper end, with the policies that you buy in the private market, there is no cap on the insurance. It's an unlimited coverage that people have. So if they get into a major medical situation in a hospital for something that is significant, those costs are going to be paid fully to the providers and to the hospitals, which is a departure from the care that's provided under Minnesota Care. So that is the idea.
Excuse me, Senator Hand.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry has a question. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hand, I'm trying to get this in my head here now. So what this bill is really intending on doing is to give coverage over that 10,000 level. And if that's the case, are there estimates on what the state, what it's costing the citizens of the state for treatment above that 10,000 level now?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Senator Perry. Yes, the fiscal note that we have, and I believe you may have a copy of that in your materials, makes some assumptions about what would happen under this plan, and there are significant savings, we believe. And this is only for 15,000 of the people covered in Minnesota Care, but after the plan is fully implemented, it's approximately slightly less than $50 million a year. We think that's a conservative estimate, but we think that is the savings that would be generated to the people of Minnesota taxpayers by using this structure rather than the structure that we're doing. And I don't want to suggest that there is no coverage at the lower end. There certainly are coverages available, and we've got some examples of plans that show, I think those are also in your packet, that show premium costs. These are commercial plans and show benefits, and this is not to suggest that people who buy a insurance product in the marketplace cannot get preventive coverage. They can, they do, they can't, they are mental health and chemical dependency coverages are available. So this is not to suggest that there is no coverage at the low end. All we're suggesting is that there is a little bit of a shift in emphasis. I believe that that it's fair to say that the Minnesota Care program is designed to cover more of those lower end costs and have a significant exposure on the upper end. What we're trying to do is change that and say we want to make sure that on the upper end, where the things are most costly, that there is coverage, and assume that on the lower end that people are going to be in a position to provide more out of their out-of-pocket costs to cover their health care costs on an ongoing basis. We think that there is a savings. That's what the fiscal note would show. But we believe that in addition to the savings, there are good principled reasons to prefer this approach rather than the one that we are currently doing, which is simply to try to pay high medical costs with taxpayer dollars. And we don't believe that structure is sustainable going forward.
Thank you.
Madam Senator Chair. Newman, I believe, had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hand, a couple of weeks ago, Senator Magnus had introduced a bill regarding the EBT cards where there was some, or to try and correct some abuses with utilization of those cards. And in this, under this bill, it appears that a financial contribution would be made on behalf of individuals, specifically to be used to purchase health care coverage offered in the private market. Could you explain to us what protections that we have to ensure that the money we are putting up, in fact, will be used for the purpose required under this bill?
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Newman. Yes, this is a structured similar to perhaps a voucher might be one way to put it. There is a, I think that the cost is paid directly by the Department of Human Services directly to an insurer, so that the cost is that we are assuming are going to be paid would be paid to an insurance company for a premium cost. There's also provision in the bill that suggests that the state can only pay 90% of the premium costs. The idea here, again, is to make sure that when the individuals who qualify under this plan, that they're looking for an insurance program, they recognize that they're going to have to pay a part of that premium themselves. The rest will be covered by the state contribution. But that will happen directly from the state, so it will be a pretty commercial transaction between an insurance provider and the department.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hand, currently in Minnesota Care, the insurance plans that provide the coverage to our Minnesota Care recipients are the private market. You know, we use Medica, Blue Cross, Blue Shield. They are providing it, and I agree that having this cap costs the state and is not the right direction, but I'm concerned about the low-end high deductible. So wouldn't it be in the state's best interest to use our muscle to negotiate with these private plans and require them or ask them to add an additional product to their offering? I've spoken to them, and they don't offer a product to this population that would have a low deductible. And as we all know, one of the surest ways to control costs is to make sure people are doing the prevention pieces of their health care, and that's why we've had such a focus on managed care, because that puts some onus on the doctors to make sure that prevention efforts are underway. So I'm concerned if we put this population into the marketplace with high deductibles, the first thing that will happen is the prevention care will go. So I don't disagree with necessarily the approach or for sure not lifting the cap, but it seems as if we put these that currently we are in the private market, but we're negotiating on their behalf. So if, in fact, we could offer them more choice, but couldn't we still negotiate collectively with the private providers to accomplish both of what you're saying?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoeff, that's a good question. I'm going to actually ask our insurance experts here in a minute to respond more in detail, as they know this better than I do in terms of the structure. But I think one of the problems that we're seeing currently is that the structure that we use under Minnesota Care, there's a capitated rate. There's a flat rate that is paid per participant. And that is, as I understand it, in the insurance market, that's an old idea that was debunked 20 or 30 years ago in terms of how to pay for insurance. What we're really doing here is asking people to go apply for an insurance policy and go through an underwriting process. And that allows the insurers to make a judgment about what the health conditions and what the costs might be for a person who buys a policy. There is an assumption that some of the people that are in the Minnesota Care pool would not make it through the underwriting process. And there are provisions in the bill and in the fiscal note that have that assumption and suggest that those people would end up in the MCHA structure, and there is actually a higher addition to the defined benefit contribution structure to help pay for the higher cost of the MCHA insurance. So I'm not sure that having the state get involved is the right way to drive down costs. I think the right way is to get the marketplace to work and to allow people to have the ability to make judgments about what's right for them. I would just say, too, that given the what the governor has proposed in his budget last week, you may remember part of it was a reduction in coverage to people under Minnesota Care. Essentially, the same population, single adults without children, the governor is proposing to cut half of those people, the upper end of the income scale, out of Minnesota Care completely. So they are completely uninsured. And he's projecting a savings of about $30 million. This plan, all those people stay covered, and it saves the state $50 million. We think this is a much preferable way to do this than what the governor is suggesting. But I want to let our testifiers answer your question a little bit more completely, if I may.
If you could identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Tyler. I serve on the Legislative Committee of the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters. I'm also on the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Physician Patient Alliance. I'm also a co-owner of Boies & Tyler Financial Group, and we specialize in individual and group health insurance employee benefits. I've been in business since 1981. Perhaps to just initially address Senator Bonoff's question, the plans that are being offered in the private market do have negotiated schedules with the healthcare providers already, whether it be Medica or Blue Cross Blue Shield or Health Partners or Preferred One or whoever the carrier happens to be. They have established negotiated discounted fee schedules, payable at what we refer to as commercial rates. The current scenario right now, yes, there are negotiated fee schedules, but there it's more of a one-way negotiation. It's more of a capitated model in which the providers are assigned already assigned a very low reimbursement schedule. But the model that's being used is more of a managed care HMO-style model, a centralized type of model that, regretfully, is rather expensive to administer on internally. We're replacing that model with more of a risk-managed model than a care-managed model. These are certainly is there's certainly plenty of care management going on, but it's really more between the physician and the doctor as far as these private fee-for-service programs are concerned. Looking at a more of a risk-managed model that does include, as Senator Hand mentioned, you know, it's health underwriting and just incorporates the process of the individual marketplace. The underwriting process is between is about 3.4% of the total administration costs that go on. And there, and the job there is to protect the solvency of the overall risk pools. But in exchange for that, the healthcare professionals, physicians, hospitals, et cetera, are paid at commercial rates, are paid much, much better than they're paid right now. So it also addresses other issues that are incorporated into some of the problems that we're incurring with regard to cost shifting. The significant underpayment of our healthcare professionals right now goes on that see Minnesota Care or medical assistance patients right now. They actually, in many cases, are receiving less than the cost of dispensing care in the present model. So driving down fee schedules is not the total picture, is not the total solution here as far as offering efficient care. What's ironic is that the healthcare professionals receive below cost reimbursements right now, but the total overall cost of the state, which is really the big item here, is very expensive. And in between there is the cost of administration overall of the managed care scenario that, as Senator Hand mentioned, is indeed a model that the private marketplace has basically rejected years ago. So we're kind of working in yesterday's model right now. And what we have learned over time is a risk-managed model is far more cost-effective. The whole process of incorporating the MCHA or the state risk pool as a complement to the individual marketplace is overall, you know, through a premium surcharge or however you wish to finance it, is by, you know, and allowing the health carriers to health underwrite and have much healthier risk pools overall is the overall formula for much lower premium costs. So what we're looking at doing is tying into that in exchange for that, instead of having a $10,000, you know, hospital limit, 10% of which is paid by the patient, now we're able to offer unlimited major medical coverage. Just so you know, all the individual plans that are being offered here do have a 100% first dollar no deductible preventive care benefit. It's mandated by law. By the Patient Protection and Affordability and Accountability Act requires that, and all the individual plans comply with that. So preventive care is not being excluded here as far as the covered services are concerned.
Senator Bonhoff.
Madam Chair, Mr. Tyler. So with the program that Senator Hand's putting forward with a defined contribution scale, you're asserting that these people could, in fact, buy a policy that wouldn't have, say, $3,000 deductible?
Mr. Tyler.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, actually, this is a reimbursement schedule that allows them to go to the marketplace. And the lower their income, the higher their reimbursement, as much as 50% higher. And then if they need to use the state risk pool, it's 20% higher above that. So if they wish a more comprehensive coverage plan with either a lower copay or a lower deductible or out-of-pocket, they are certainly free to choose it. They also are obviously able to use whatever monies they're using right now of their own towards premiums to help pay, you know, the costs of the coverage that they choose. So it's really up to them to choose the cost, or the coverage via the cost that's really best for them. So absolutely, absolutely.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tyler, so I see other people in the audience shaking their heads. So I've heard different than that, and so I'd like to put that aside for now, but let you know that I'm not, that there seems to be some concern over that ability to, for this population under this proposal, to have insurance that doesn't have high deductibles. And if, in fact, I find out that that's correct, then that would be great, because that is one of my greatest concerns. Thank you.
If I could,
Mr. Tyler.
Just comment. Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff, the type of plan that's being suggested here is more of a copay-style plan, especially for outpatient services in particular. And the copays can range anywhere from $10, $15, $20, $30, $40, $50, and up, depending upon what the subscriber or the enrollee chooses for themselves. The deductibles and the out-of-pocket services generally apply more towards the hospitalization services overall. And so people can choose a plan that is limited to a certain number of visits with a copay per year. They can choose a plan that is unlimited services on an outpatient basis So there really is quite a broad array of different types of plans. So if they wish to have a lower out-of-pocket type of scenario, they are certainly free to choose it. So that's the nature of the individual marketplace. Any marketplace is really freedom of choice.
Thank you.
Senator Hand, how do you?
Madam Chair, and I don't know, we've got another testifier here. Would you like to?
Yes, the PowerPoint.
We've got
do we have time to do that PowerPoint?
I think there is in your packet a set of slides that called the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program. We'd like to at least walk through that with you, and I'm going to ask do a little switch over here and go ahead and introduce yourself, and you can take us through that.
Madam Chair and Senators, my name is Chris Schneeman. I, like Mr. Tyler, I'm also an independent insurance agent here in the state of Minnesota. Offices downtown St. Paul. Been in the business since 1978. I am pleased to present this this PowerPoint presentation. Are we going to put it up, or should we just walk through it?
Just walk through it.
Just walk through it. And to a degree, we're going to be. Reiterating what Senator Hahn has already pointed out, but we wanted to make sure that some of the highlights of this approach are apparent to you. But the objective of Senate File 32 is really to provide better, more comprehensive coverage for adults with children who are currently enrolled in Minnesota care. As Senator Hahn has pointed out, currently they really don't have major medical coverage. They are subject to a $10,000 limit on their hospital coverage. And under current arrangement, those folks who do have high claims are ultimately asked to walk through bankruptcy, go onto the welfare program through medical assistance. And so what we're trying to do is avoid that possibility or probability and keep them in the private insurance market rather than move them to the public side. And we also believe that this is possible at equal or lesser cost to the state of Minnesota. How does it do this? It does it by using these individual private insurance policies rather than put them in a regular public extension called Minnesota Care. And that for those who are higher risk here in Minnesota, as many of you know, we've had a risk pool since 1976 called MCHA that I think all of us here are very proud of that would accommodate the higher risk people that might not be placed in a regular commercial product, but still placed in the commercial marketplace at commercial reimbursements for doctors and hospitals. Some of the benefits, we believe it significantly reduces the state's cost to cover adults without children, and we did receive a fiscal note that indicated $112 million saving during the biennial. And we also believe that it will bring long-term stability to the Minnesota Healthcare Access Fund, those assets have been depleting. Other benefits, increase access to private healthcare providers by paying commercial reimbursement rates rather than Medicaid or the capitated rates that Mr. Tyler was referring to. In effect, we are also addressing access to care, even though it's not a specific bullet here. One of the problems in a different population that has become very evident is the dental benefit for children under Minnesota Care, and that providers, dentists, are less apt now today to accept patients who are having their dental care financed through the Minnesota Care program because of the low reimbursement. So we've gone from just financing care to actually finding somebody to actually provide the care. And so what we're hoping to do is to put these lower-income folks into the regular reimbursement system so that they would have the same access to doctors, hospitals, as others. So benefits to this approach continued. Reduces current the problem of cost shifting. I think I've just touched on that. And also supports and creates jobs in the private healthcare market by ensuring adequate reimbursements to doctors and other medical providers. We believe that it'll build on the strengths of the community health centers and help grow their outreach. This is a rejuvenized interest of many people is to take those community health systems that are currently in play in Minnesota and encourage their growth. They've proven themselves to be very cost-effective centers for the very low income. particularly for the preventative care and some of the basic kinds of things that that people need. Enhances the portability for continuation of insurance for those who lose income eligibility. One of the big problems, and this was borne out in studies at the Department of Health, is that most of the uninsured that we have in the state of Minnesota are those people that are falling in and out of eligibility for public assistance. And they tend to just become uninsured. If we are able to get them a regular commercial individual policy, then they will be able to continue that coverage as their eligibility for assistance changes. So we'll provide some continuity there. And those are really the highlights. But we think, as Senator Hahn had mentioned, is that by moving the program to just a pure public plan and more into a commercial system where participants can choose their own plan, have better access to the doctors of their choice, that this would probably be a good thing for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Are there questions? Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. I understand that there was a representative from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce who was intending to be here this morning to testify. She has testified in other committees on the bill. I understand that she had a death in the family and was not able to be here today, but did want to at least point out that that we do have support of the Chamber of Commerce. We have, I don't know if there's anybody here from the Hospital Association that wants to comment, but we've had support from the Hospital Association. I think they have some questions about some aspects of the bill. And we also have had some comment from NAMI, the National Association of Mental Illness, Sue Aberholden. We did put an amendment on the bill in the Commerce Committee to offer a further incentive for folks who are participating in this program to encourage them to buy a policy that does have mental health and chemical dependency coverage. Most of the basic policies in the private market do have this. The rate schedule or the reimbursement schedule that we anticipate in the bill would certainly cover those, but we wanted to put some language in the bill that was offered an amendment to encourage that to happen. And so, Madam Chair, I don't know if there are other folks here who want to testify, but there are other questions. But
are there any other people who would like to testify on the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Sue Aberholden. I'm Executive Director of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Minnesota. I do want to thank Senator Hahn for putting in the amendment so that there is an incentive to cover mental health services and chemical dependency. We still have one small concern, and that is with the high deductible. I think when you look at the poverty schedule, someone making, frankly, under $16,000 a year, so 15-something, really cannot purchase with the subsidy and with what money would be left over a plan that has anything, less than $3,000 deductible. I did go online both to healthcare.gov and to, the kind of known players in Minnesota, and the most that I could find was a deductible for $2,500, although that one didn't have chemical dependency coverage. Most really were around $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 in terms of what you could purchase for that subsidy. I think it's, I understand what they're trying to do, but I think I would just kind of say that Minnesota Care is kind of the opposite of a catastrophic plan, so it makes sure that you get coverage for those kind of everyday things, and if you have a mental illness, it covers, your therapy visits, which is going to be more than one a year, and things like that. I think it's important to remember in the plans that I looked at, you basically get three visits, and then you pay everything till it hits the $3,000, and then your insurance kicks in. So it's very different than Minnesota Care Now, which kind of pays for, the services that you need, and if you need hospitalization, it only pays up to a certain amount. So it's really, I just want to make sure that people understand the choice that's there. But again, I appreciate your willingness to work with us, and you knew all along I had kind of three issues, and you got rid of one, and I appreciate that.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, Ms. Aberholden, I think one of the other concerns that you expressed, and I'm not sure if it's been taken care of, is that Minnesota Care has a different benefit set for people with mental illness. We have added more preventative services like ACT teams that will go out and visit people when they're in a crisis to keep them out of the hospital and keep them in their own home. and private insurance doesn't offer that type of benefit. Am I correct that that has not been amended or changed in the bill since it left the Health and Human Services Committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, that is correct.
Senator Holden?
So in 2007, this legislature, in a bipartisan way, added what we called the model benefit set. So all three of the, at that time, public health care programs, General Assistance Medical Care, Minnesota Care, and Medical Assistance, covered a wide range of benefits for both children and adults, including mental health crisis teams, assertive community treatment teams, adult rehab mental health services, children's therapeutic services and support, and residential. And we, you know, we do have data that show that ACT teams and crisis teams do greatly reduce hospitalizations. Now, some private plans do now cover crisis teams, but again, that would fall under the $3,000 deductible that they would have to pay before it would be covered.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're not supposed to ask a question if you don't already know the answer, and I don't know the answer to this, but do we have any information about this population and how many within it have exceeded the $10,000 that limitation on hospital? In other words, they run into real trouble because what $10,000, is that a day? Or two in a hospital. Do we know what the track record is, and do we know also, in light of the programs that Senator Berglund has brought up, what change that has made in terms of a pattern, if it in fact has prevented hospitalization? Is there any tracking of that kind of data to know what the impact of it is? So there's kind of two prongs there. How many go over that 10,000, and also what's the impact of these other options in terms of reducing hospitalization?
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Olson. I don't have that data here today. I don't know if I'm sure we can get access to that, but I don't have an answer to the specific question about how many people end up over that $10,000 upper limit, and I don't have that here today, but I can certainly ask and find out. Your other question with respect to the what is the effect of having this enhanced benefit set, I think Ms. Aberholden seems to have some information here that she'd like to point to. I think that whenever you're talking about preventive things, it's a lot like, I guess, doing a fiscal note. You make assumptions about things that may or may not happen and play that forward. So I don't know what if you want to answer that.
Ms. Aberholden, do you have some information?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Olson. Now, this wouldn't be just within Minnesota Care. We don't have it broken down that way, but just overall. So it would be Medicaid, Minnesota Care, and General Assistance Medical Care. The number of hospital bed days went from 21,942 for people who received ACT team services down to 6,646, so a pretty significant change. For adult rehab mental health services, hospital bed days went from 20,211 down to 11,169. And for crisis services, well, I don't have the same kind of bed days, but the number of people who are hospitalized within 7 days dropped dramatically. So it, because it's an alternative to putting someone in the hospital.
Thank you.
It's approximately.
Can I just follow up? I think
Olson?
It would be useful in terms of the proposal that's before us to have some information about this population and the impact that that has had. So if it's attainable, I would be interested in seeing what that is. Because it might also offer an option for how one might ameliorate that challenge when you look at the amount of savings that this proposal could bring about.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, a couple of years ago, we worked on trying to improve the hospital benefit set in Minnesota Care, and the governor wouldn't accept that change. But at that time, it was less than 30% of the Minnesota Care participants used up their hospital benefit. And it was far less than in the commercial market of people that were hospitalized at all. And I'm assuming that it has something to do with the structure of the Minnesota Care program that encourages people to use outpatient primary care services rather than to wait and use hospital benefits. We would have liked to have improved the hospital benefit. We think it hasn't been updated since the Minnesota Care program was created, and obviously we've had a lot of medical inflation since then. But at the time that we were trying to do it, we were not allowed to make a change in it.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, have you looked at how the establishment of the health care exchanges would somehow integrate or work with this approach? Have you spoken to the commissioner about that? Do you have any sense about that?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, I've not spoken to the commissioner specifically about this bill and its interaction with a potential insurance exchange. In talking with some of the people in the insurance industry, they believe that the exchanges or that the idea of the exchange would work well with this structure. There is some uncertainty about exactly what the federal government is going to require under the insurance exchanges, so there is, I think, it may be difficult to make a clear answer or a definitive answer to that question. As I understand it, I don't think there's anything that we're proposing here that would be in conflict with at least some idea of what an insurance exchange would require. But I guess I don't have a clear answer for that.
A follow-up, Senator Bonner?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hahn, and with regard to the high deductible, do you think that you could, in your conversations with the plans, have any impact in their offerings, and what's your intent in terms of going forward? Do you want to work some of these things out, or is it your plan to just move this bill as is?
Senator Hahn?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, this bill is also making its way through the other body, and I'm not sure where they are exactly in that process. I think they have made some modifications in their side to what the bill is. We are trying to accomplish, I guess, generally, as we said, a change in direction. We are very concerned about the affordability of the structure that we have going forward. Whenever you talk about defining a fixed benefit set, I think you raise cost to everyone in the course of doing that. We think that setting up a structure that allows for underwriting and the ability to use the marketplace is, in the long term, the best way to create incentives to drive costs down. I know in talking to the Hospital Association, they were suggesting that we perhaps put some upper limit on what the deductible might be. And that's certainly an approach that has been talked about. We have not adopted it in this bill. I think from my perspective, what we want to try to do is create the maximum amount of freedom for people to make choices about what is right for them and give them a contribution amount that would permit them to do that. And again, as I understand it, the deductible amounts primarily apply when a person gets into a hospitalization situation. So meeting those deductibles, there is an exposure, I think maybe more so than what you have under Minnesota Care, but on the upper end, there is not the exposure that we have. So there is a trade-off in approach here, and I understand that, and I'm not trying to, make the case that this does everything that Minnesota Care does in the same way. But what we are trying to make a case for is that we have to do some things differently. We have to do something that is affordable. I think it's telling that in the governor and his approach at looking at the budget, his election was to deny coverage to a certain portion of people that we're saying we can cover. It may not be coverage in exactly the same way, but we would argue that the form of coverage that we're proposing here is better than no coverage at all, which I think is apparently the alternative that the governor has taken.
Senator Olson, then Senator Magnus, and Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hahn, in light of the fact that almost 30% do actually exceed that, that's significant. And it would seem to me that the copay or the deductible actually, I think these people are capable of thinking and making decisions. I think we're trusting them to do that. That in itself could be an incentive to try to use less costly means and work on the preventative care. But certainly now, if you go in the hospital, you're going to surpass that 10,000. And what, you know, what a burden that is, emotional and otherwise, that is what you will be facing. So I really like your approach, and I think that it actually works. It has the incentives in the right place. And there may be some, you know, modifications are working along as you proceed along the way, but I think it certainly has merit.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. I think it's my understanding that many people who are on Minnesota Care, it's not clear to them that they have this upper limit. There has been even discussions and proposals made along the way in the past to try to make that provision of Minnesota Care more transparent to people who buy the, or who are being covered by that policy. There's some question about how well that is known. And it is, I think, one of the things that we're trying to ensure against is if you are at a certain income level and you end up in the hospital and you have a Minnesota Care policy and you exceed that $10,000 coverage, then you are suddenly faced with a monumental debt that might require you going to bankruptcy or liquidate your assets or become completely dependent on medical assistance going forward. And if depending on the size of the hospitalization cost, that could be significant. And I think there are at least some people currently in the Minnesota Care structure who do not realize that they have that exposure, that they believe they are covered with the Minnesota Care policy, and they are, but not on the upper end where the costs are the most dramatic and the most potentially damaging long term. So I think you're right. We believe that this is a preferable structure. I agree with you that people need to make choices about what they can afford and what is best for them, and people are going to make different choices. We want to give them maximum flexibility. But I also think it's a little bit like I've used the analogy in talking to other people about this. When people buy a car and they buy insurance, there's an expectation that there's going to be significant out-of-pocket costs to have a car. You're going to have to buy gas. You're going to buy tires once in a while. You're going to do maintenance. You're going to, you know, wash it, change the oil. All those things are not covered by an insurance policy. They're covered out-of-pocket. And it may be several thousand dollars a year that people have to expend out of their pocket to have a car and drive it to work every day. That's expected. That's what we assume. But we don't assume that for some reason about health care. We have taken the approach that every dollar of health care costs ought to be paid for by some kind of, and we call it insurance, but I would argue it's not true insurance. It is a reimbursement structure that we've created and use the assistance of the state taxpayers to do that. What we're really arguing for here is a return to a more accurate or more true insurance model, which is to insure risk that is unanticipated and costly, and to expect that there will be some level of participation on part of individuals in out-of-pocket costs on an ongoing basis. And that does represent, I agree, a shift from the philosophy of Minnesota Care. But we believe that this one is sustainable and long-term is the better approach.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hahn, I would be interested to know what the fiscal impact of Section 4 is with the veterans issue. I don't see that broken out in the fiscal note, and I was wondering if you could tell me a little more about that, what the estimated costs or savings would be,
just by
asking folks if they are veterans when they come in.
Madam Chair and Senator Magnus and members of the committee, Section 4 is a provision of the bill that requires that people who apply for Minnesota Care, they're asked whether or not they're veterans. And I think the idea here is to make sure that people who are qualified to receive coverage under a veterans program, that they would have an opportunity to do that rather than end up in the Minnesota Care. I don't know if that has been costed out or looked at specifically in the fiscal note, and if there's somebody here from the department that was working on the fiscal note that may be in a position to answer that, I'd welcome their comment. I'm not sure. if there is a cost or what that cost assumption is.
Is there someone who would like to address that issue?
Something you can respond to.
Madam Chair, Senator Magnus, Dave Greenman with the Department of Human Services. We did look at this section, and in the past we've talked with the Veterans, the Department of Veterans Affairs about issues related to health care and putting people in giving people information about if they are veterans about our programs. There's nothing that requires them to take the veterans benefits instead of the Minnesota Care. So it's not clear to us how much or how many of them would actually, how that would affect our enrollment. So we have not addressed that in the fiscal note.
Yeah. Well, Madam Senator Chair, Magnus. just to follow up on that, so that's not included in there. And I, you know, with the talk we heard last year in the debate on the GAMC and others, we heard all kinds of numbers thrown out about veterans in here, and so I researched it because I was the ranking member in the Veterans Agriculture and Veterans Committee, and Senator Hahn and I are veterans ourselves, aren't we, Senator? So they certainly have a close place in my heart with that. But when I researched it, I also figured out that when they go in and talk to these to the county veterans service officers, they also should go through an assessment to figure out if they do have longer-term health problems, if they do have long-term problems that are affecting their ability to, I used to call it a muddy, to get off the muddy slope of a hill, but after the experiencing a few snowstorms here in St. Paul, I'd figure out getting out off of the snowbound roads here in St. Paul, because that's about the situation they're in. If you go through an assessment and get some help for education, it gets some help in other areas, that gets them off the slippery slope. And I would submit, Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, you've got a very conservative fiscal note here if you don't count, number one, those people moving off into a federal-funded program, and number two, getting them off the treadmill of dependency on someone else, someone else's money. So those are important issues.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, this proposal does not go into effect for 48 months. So essentially we'd have about a year of operating this program before we would have to be beginning to operate something under the Affordable Care Act. And one of the things that we do know about this proposal that is not in keeping with the Affordable Care Act is that the Affordable Care Act says that people will not have out-of-pocket costs at 400% of poverty of over 10% of their income. And I'm not going to offer my amendment today because you haven't been willing to accept it, so I know that it wouldn't be adopted here today. But at 275% of poverty, clearly the Affordable Care Act would require out-of-pocket that would be far less than 10%. I think we could probably agree on that. So I don't think that this is a good transition to whatever the federal government is going to have for people through an exchange. I also think it's important for people to read the fiscal note. And the fiscal note says that that this benefit is 40% less than the benefit we have in Minnesota Care today. And that is even with the hospital benefit that we have in Minnesota Care today that I think everybody could agree needs to be improved. 40% less. So that means that the participants are going to have to pay 40% more out of pocket, whether it's through a deductible or a copay or however it happens, they're going to have to pay 40% more out of pocket. And I don't believe that's affordable for the people that are in this program. And so that means that if it's not a hospital that's having trouble collecting from somebody, it'll be a clinic or a pharmacy or some other healthcare provider that is trying to provide services that isn't going to be able to get paid because this person can't afford to pay them. The fiscal note also indicates that there would be a 10% drop in coverage, which stands to reason since probably about half of these people are going to be denied coverage through an insurance agent and are going to have to try to apply to MSHA. And the harder you make it for people, the more hoops they have to go through, the more drop-off you get. And so there will be some people that when they're denied coverage the first time will not go through the process of looking for other coverage and will just assume they got turned down. I think these are all things in the bill that are troubling to me, and I hope they'll be troubling to the other members of this committee, and so I don't plan to support this bill today.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Berglund, for your comments. And I let me try to respond to a couple of the things you mentioned. I think we probably are going to end up disagreeing about the virtues and the perhaps even the likelihood of the federal health care structure being implemented as it is designed today. I'm more of a skeptic about that. You may be more of an optimist about that. But we won't know for a while what is going to be the future of that federal plan. I believe that we should, for lots of reasons, all hope that it doesn't happen. I think that from my perspective, we want to try to have the maximum amount of flexibility and the ability to make decisions about health care here in Minnesota. And you know probably more than anyone the kinds of constraints that the federal requirements put on our ability to do things in Minnesota that we may think are of value that make it that we cannot do because of the constraints the federal government has on the current structure. And I see that the proposed expansion would carry us further down that path of tying our hands and driving up costs because of the lack of ability for us to make changes that we think would make financial sense. So I'm not trying to essentially structure the bill to accommodate a future event that may or may not occur. As I said, I'm hoping that it doesn't occur. I think there's good reason to believe that it won't happen, at least as it's talked about today. But in my opinion, we would certainly have time between now and 2014 if that eventuality does occur to make adjustments to the plan we're proposing to try to meet whatever constraints that are developed at that point. You mentioned the fiscal note that there are expectation that there's less benefits. And all I would say is I don't know that that is to suggest that every single person covered under MinnesotaCare is going to take the exact same benefits. Those benefits may be provided, and for the purposes of a fiscal note, they're going to be costed out, but I don't know that it's a fair assumption to say that everybody's going to use those things, that people have different health care needs. But what I do know is that when you put into place into a plan a requirement that certain things be covered, there is a cost to do that coverage. And if a person doesn't really need that coverage, they still end up paying for it. And it's one of the things that drives cost in the current structure. And so you could say, well, we don't have a defined benefit structure in the plan. That is correct. And MinnesotaCare does, and so you're going to say, well, the MinnesotaCare plan has got some benefits, and you can cost those out, and this plan doesn't do that. That's right. We don't define those benefits. But I'm not going to make the assumption that every person that is covered is going to need all those benefits, and so therefore they may not need to pay for all those benefits. And I think that's one of the things, the flexibility that this plan offers that MinnesotaCare may not. And you're right, there is assumptions in the bill to say that there's an expectation that some people will not be successful in getting through an underwriting process. Currently would require that they end up into the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association plan. There is provision in the bill to fund that at a higher level if that were to happen. We are also working on a bill to try to reform the MCHA structure that would, we hope, make it easier for that transition to occur. But I don't know that I would presume that if a person is denied coverage through underwriting that they would then say, well, I don't want any coverage at all. I'm not sure that that's the case. And I know for purposes of a fiscal note, assumptions have to be made. I believe that they are conservative, to Senator Magnus's point. I believe that there's every incentive that people would have to get some coverage. We're trying to provide a structure to facilitate that. But I understand your point, and I guess I'd like to continue to work with you on this. And hopefully if we do see this situation with the federal government imposing things on us, that we can find some ways to accommodate that going forward.
Senator
Berglund.
Madam Chair, Senator Hunt, I don't think that you answered the question that I have about you know, your concern that hospitals have unreimbursed expenses. What about the other providers in your bill that will have unreimbursed expenses? Because people won't be able to afford to pay the deductible or the copay that, you know, under the fiscal note equals about 40% of what the benefits are today.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, again, these are, there are assumptions that are made. I'm not sure that I accept the point or the assumption that everybody who is going to be paying out of pocket will not be able to pay those things out of pocket. I think that does happen today. I understand that. I think it happens today even under some of the deductibles that Minnesota Care requires that people pay. So I understand that there are people who will not pay the costs that they are supposed to pay. I'm not sure that my bill or any bill can totally solve that problem. But again, what we are trying to do is recognize that the significant costs to providers are the upper end costs and that this is a program that does cover those. And we believe that on balance that there will be a higher degree of reimbursement for costs than under this plan than under Minnesota Care.
We have Senator Goodwin and members. We do have another bill after this, so we need to keep that in mind as we wrap up this discussion. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hand, are you saying, I thought I heard you say that the deductible applies only to hospitalizations, and then I heard you say that the deductible applies to other things too. So what's the correct answer?
Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, I think it's probably both. I maybe John Tyler can answer that. What we're doing is we're not proposing in this that here is a plan that people have to buy. People have money. They will go to the marketplace, and they will choose. And they may choose structures that maybe have different levels of personal responsibility that they have to bear at different levels. And I think it really depends on what they choose. And I don't know if John Tyler would like to respond more fully. He's an expert in insurance. I am not, but perhaps you could help me on this.
Mr. Tyler.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin. The plan premium basis that was used to use our basis schedule on is a plan that does have a deductible after three office visits per, you know, outpatient office visits per calendar year. Hospitalizations and outpatient services will apply to that $3,000 deductible, and the policy itself has a $4,000 total out of pocket incorporated with that. About 5% more in premium, depending upon the age, maybe a little bit less, will allow an individual to buy a plan that does not have any limits as far as doctor's visits on an outpatient basis after a copay of about $20 or so. In that particular program, only hospitalizations have a deductible associated with them. So the model that was used, if people choose not to have any premium out-of-pocket expense, the reimbursement schedule will buy a plan that has a three office visit per year copay structure, and then it goes into the deductible. If they wish to use a little bit of their own money to apply towards the premiums, then they can buy a plan that is a little more comprehensive. If they want to use a lot more of their own money, they can buy a plan that is a lot more comprehensive. So it really is in large part up to the enrollee as to how Cadillac they want their plan, how much risk they're willing to assume.
Madam Chair and
Senator Goodwin
and Senator Hand, it sounds like the deductibles do apply to, or most likely will apply to everything. Otherwise, the premium rate will be significantly above what most people can afford. And what people that I've referred to AMCHA over the years have always come back saying that the costs for AMCHA, the premiums are so outrageous that there's no way they could possibly afford to accept that. Now we're talking about people that are at 133% or more of the poverty level. And you said perhaps we can change the structure there. It sounds like that isn't really done in your bill, and so we're going to just kind of throw these people to the wolves in the meantime and say you don't get hospitalization. So I guess my question would be how many, or you don't get health care. So I guess my question would be how many more people do you believe will be uninsured under this plan, because there's got to be a lot that will just not be able to afford insurance at all.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, I guess I don't assume that anyone is going to go uninsured. Obviously, people can make choices, and some people make choices with which I disagree, and I'm sure that you disagree with as well. What we believe is that people are interested in their health care, that they are interested in trying to provide for the health care of themselves and their family, and that they're willing to do what they need to do, that it's a priority. We're offering a structure that allows the maximum amount of flexibility and individual responsibility to do that, and we presume that people have that interest and that desire to do that. We as I mentioned, we are looking at the MSHA structure to try to modify that. That's not part of this bill. I think that's a – we are working on another proposal that we hope we can bring forward at some point this session. We don't know that that's exactly pertinent. I think the MSHA structure, what it's doing is it is providing insurance for a pool of people that are called uninsurable or high risk or that would not survive under underwriting. That is a more expensive insurance. If you it's like a person who has auto insurance and has a history of a number of moving violations or, you know, driving under the influence or other kinds of things, their costs are going to be higher than a person who doesn't have that. What the MSHA pool, I think, is designed to is to provide a guarantee coverage for people that are a higher risk. There is going to be more cost to do that. I think that our structure does provide a revenue stream, an additional revenue stream to provide financing to the MSHA structure. And then this is not to say that there cannot be or should not be modifications to what MSHA is doing. But I don't believe, as a matter of opinion, that we're going to see more people uninsured as a result of this plan.
Madam Chair, one final question. Senator Hahn, would you be willing to trade your current insurance for this?
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, I have no problem personally going to a private insurance market and buying insurance. I don't know that anybody should have a problem with that. I believe that one of the problems that we have generally in the system is that we have tried to manage the healthcare system and, frankly, overmanage the insurance system through a political process instead of having the market work. We are trying to move in the direction of creating a structure that allows the dynamics of a marketplace to work with us to keep costs down, to provide incentives for people to provide coverage at efficient rates. That's one of the huge problems we have in the current structure. There are no incentives on the part of providers or others to look for low-cost, high-quality. There are no incentives to do that. If people are paying for their own coverage in a large degree, there is a natural incentive for people to say, well, how can I get the most for my money, my dollar? What we're offering is an opportunity for everyone, even at low incomes, to have that same opportunity that the rest of us do if we're using the private market today.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hand and Senator Berglund, I know you've been around dealing with this for a long time, but I can tell you exactly what will happen when I get back to my office. We have citizens out there that are concerned about this that don't understand when you start throwing out 275% of poverty level, 400% of poverty level. Let's be realistic here and try to find a number so that they can kind of get into this and understand. I mean, if we average it out, if we're talking a family of four, let's be realistic and throw out what we're looking at for their income level. It will just help the discussion when I get back and I have constituents calling saying, well, sounds okay, but what's this 400% of poverty level? That's my only question here, Madam Chair, because it does get frustrating for some of the folks that are trying to follow this.
Senator Hahn, want to address what is 275% of the poverty level?
Do you have that
right now?
Madam Chair, I think we do have one of our testifiers has some resource. 2010 Federal Poverty Level Guideline, family of four. 100% of federal poverty is $22,000. 400% is $88,000. So family of four at 400% of the federal poverty guideline would be a family of four with an $88,000 income. Family of four, 133% of federal poverty, just under $30,000, $29,326. 150% of poverty would be $33,000. 200% of poverty, about $44,000. And I can provide Senator Perry and other members of the committee, if you'd like, this document, if you wish.
Thank you, Senator Hahn. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I just need to also clarify one comment, and that is that for people that would end up in MSHA under this plan, which I think everybody here would agree would be the sickest people, people that would not get through the underwriting process, there are no three free visits to a doctor under MSHA. And the best MSHA offers is a $500 deductible, 80-20 copay. And with the structure of the defined contribution that's in this bill, people are not going to be able to afford the $500 deductible. It's going to be more like $3,000. So for the sickest people, there's going to be no free visits to the doctor, and there's going to be a lot of out-of-pocket costs to go see a doctor. And this is for the sickest people.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, the current MSHA structure, we're not proposing to change in this bill. And so those things are currently true today, that people who are in MSHA, as you're describing it, that is the fact, that is what it is today. And I would agree that we should look at MSHA and revise it. In fact, there's been some discussion that perhaps MSHA can offer a structure similar to what we're proposing in this bill that would provide opportunity for people in MSHA to buy a plan that does allow more preventive coverage. They currently don't do that. But they offer things that are that we tell them to offer under law, and we've got a structure, and I would agree with you. We need to examine that and make some modifications to it. We're not proposing to do that in this bill, but I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't look at what MSHA is doing.
Okay. I would like to announce that a quorum is present, and I think we're ready to take action on the bill. So, Senator Hand, you have a motion.
Madam Chair and members, I would move that the committee pass the bill and refer it to the floor.
Okay. Senator Hand moves that Senate File 32 be recommended to pass to the Senate floor. Senator Berglund?
I'd request a roll call vote.
Roll call will be taken.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Berglund?
No.
Senator Cohen? Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Roebling?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Oh, Senator Bonoff.
Senator Bonoff.
Sorry.
No.
On a motion, on a vote of 9-5, the motion does prevail and the bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Senator Hahn will be staying up there to present Senate File 33.
Oh, yeah, that I don't know. That would really be low.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the other bill that I have before you today is Senate File 33. We're calling it the Freedom of Choice in Healthcare Act. The reason this bill is before your committee, it is essentially a statement of policy preference for Minnesota, and it does have, we included in it a provision that would repeal the statutes that permit the early enrollment in the Medicaid plan that Governor Dayton elected to participate in earlier in the session. I do have an amendment. I believe it's in your packet. I don't have it up here in front. I don't even know what the number is, but it is an amendment that would remove this provision, which is the only cost provision in the bill. And the reason that I'm proposing to make this amendment, and if I may Madam Chair and members, I'd like to offer that amendment. I'm sorry, I don't know the number.
It's the A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment. I'd like to offer the A3 amendment.
Did you want to explain it a little further?
Well, Madam Chair, the A3 amendment is simply removing Section 3 of the bill, which is the repealer language. As we went through this process in the course of providing the fiscal note to the bill, the only part of the bill that had a cost associated with it, and there is some debate, I guess, philosophically about cost to the general fund versus the healthcare access fund and so forth. But the net effect of the repealer was that there was additional cost to the forecasted budget, and after some consideration, we felt that it might be an easier approach just to not deal with that issue, especially given the likelihood that the governor is not likely to sign a bill that repeals an action that he's taken already. So we wanted to repeal that, take the cost out of the bill, and just leave it be a more straightforward presentation of a policy that we think makes sense for the people of Minnesota.
So, Senator Hanek, I am assuming Section 3 is what brought this bill into the Finance Committee, because it is the fiscal part of the bill. So you're making the motion to remove the fiscal note, basically, for the bill.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Does everyone understand that? So Senator Hand moves that moves Amendment A3 be passed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, the motion does prevail. Senator Hand, then briefly to the bill, since now we don't have any fiscal implications with it.
I understand. Thank you, members and Madam Chair. That is the reason that the bill is in the Finance Committee. But I would be happy to at least outline very briefly for you what the bill does. It is very simple. It has a few definitions in the first part of the bill. The real heart of the bill is what is called under Subdivision 3, a statement of public policy, which is simply saying that the power to regulate a person's choice in the mode of securing health care services or to impose a penalty related to that is not found as part of the Constitution of the United States and is therefore a power reserved to the people and for the several states pursuant to provisions under the federal Constitution, and that Minnesota recognizes that and exercises its power to declare that to be the public policy of the state of Minnesota regarding the right of citizens living in this state to choose their mode of securing health care. That is really what it does. And we think it's important that we do this, given, going back to the discussion that Senator Berglund and I were having earlier, the kinds of things that are going on at the federal level. And to me, the fundamental question is for us as a state whether we are going to say that the power to make decisions about health care and the costs and the public participation in are decisions that ought to be taken here in this body, not in Washington, D.C. And it's been my experience, although limited, and I would imagine Senator Berglund could testify even more in detail than I can, that the intrusion of the federal government into healthcare policy and healthcare financing has imposed severe constraints on the ability of the state of Minnesota to deal with its finances. I've looked at the total structure of Health and Human Services. It's about a $24 billion expense that we have every biennium. Half of that money is federal money. If you look at just the portion of that total $24 billion that is provided at the, by the state without any federal participation at all, it's less than $2 billion of that 24. So when you look at the magnitude of what we spend and the amount of money that we get from the federal government and the fact that all those dollars have conditions applied to them and we're looking at prospectively a new structure going forward from the federal government, I find that it is very troubling, not only as a matter of principle or constitutional thinking or philosophy, but also as a matter of fiscal interest, that when we say that we're going to allow the federal government to set and define the perhaps the largest part of the Minnesota state budget by federal action without our ability to manage it, I find that very, very troubling. And so I would just urge that we adopt this as a policy. It really is only asking the question whether we believe that that is that these decisions ought to occur here in Minnesota rather than in Washington.
Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair and Senator Hand, today a state employee, for example, who has insurance provided as an employee is required when they reach the age of 65 to sign up for Medicare. And if they fail to do so, their insurance company will refuse to pay their claims. Would this bill prohibit that so that people would have a choice as to whether they sign up for Medicare or not.
Senator Hahn?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I don't know that this bill prohibits that. I think what it does is it reserves or preserves the right of people to choose. I think that what you're pointing to, as I understand it, there are troubling aspects of Medicare that speak to the ability to continue private insurance past age 65. I think that is a troubling component of our current structure. I think that that is something that we should address. This bill does not try to address that. It is simply saying and making a point that the decisions about health care, the decisions about health policy ought to be made here in Minnesota, not by the federal government.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
The bill does say that there may not be a penalty imposed as a result of being required to purchase insurance. So I think the bill goes further than just saying, making a policy statement that we prefer to make decisions in Minnesota. It says that people cannot do certain things in the state of Minnesota, including imposing a penalty for not purchasing insurance. And I think what I've just described, I would at least define as a penalty.
Senator Hahn?
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, if we were to pass this bill, I think that there would be other things that we may want to do to assure that what we are doing in Minnesota is consistent with what the people of Minnesota expect. I don't believe that there ought to be a penalty, frankly. I don't believe that we ought to say that people must enroll in Medicare after age 65. I don't believe that we should have that as a requirement. This bill does not do those things that might be possible if we take that position, but I think that if we adopt this, there certainly may be things that we'd want to contemplate doing.
We do have two people who signed up to testify that we'd like to bring up to the table. Kim Crockett, if she's here, and Evan from the Freedom Foundation, if he's here.
Good morning. My neck is cranked from driving last night and this morning, so I'm going to try to raise this if I can. My name is Kim Crockett, and I'm president and general counsel of the Minnesota Free Market Institute. I've got a description of that organization for you in the written materials. Thank you for inviting me to testify today about Senate File 33. I've been writing and speaking about federalism and the Constitution as a leader in the Federalist Society for many years, and more recently as president of the Minnesota Free Market Institute. We are a nonprofit educational organization dedicated to individual liberty, limited government, and free markets. While most Americans agree that health care reform is vital, the national conversation about reform was cut short by the passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, commonly called Obamacare. Obamacare, as well as the rough manner in which it was passed, is an unprecedented assertion of federal power over states and individuals. I'm going to briefly outline how Senate File 33 fits into the legal debate surrounding Obamacare, and give you an update on Judge Vinson's ruling in Florida a few weeks back and whether or not the ruling amounted to an injunction. I'm limiting my testimony to the constitutional issues and not the policy ones. I'll leave that to others. And wanted to ask, what's our timing so that I may cut back my remarks? So
Ms. Crockett, we...
You do have my written testimony in front of you.
We can go a little over 10 o'clock. Our normal ending time is 10.
I was wondering if it was 10
or 10:30. The Commerce
Committee
is not meeting today, so we don't have to clear out quite as quickly.
All right.
But if you, this is the Finance Committee, so we don't have to go too deeply into policy.
All right. Well, let me just summarize. And I said you have my written comments in front of you. The federal government has truly awesome powers to regulate us, but they are powers that are limited and they are enumerated. And according to Judge Vinson, and I would agree with him, the federal government does not have the power to regulate inactivity. And he characterized the individual mandate in Obamacare as inactivity, and thus Congress exceeded its power under the Commerce Clause, which is why he ruled that the individual mandate was unconstitutional. And because the legislation, for whatever reason, did not contain a severability clause, he ruled that the entire act was unconstitutional. What I will do is cut to whether or not he issued an injunction. And I gave you a debate going on among attorneys and scholars in the nation over whether or not Judge Vinson's ruling amounted to an injunction, which would affect whether or not we implement Obamacare. And the strongest position is that it was an injunction. The Attorney General in Wisconsin has taken the position, for example, that it was an injunction, and he considers the act dead. A more prudent position might be to see what the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals says. We are welcome in Minnesota to draw our own conclusions about that, and I've provided you with some of that information. Bottom line is that as state senators, right now the federal judges are split 2-2 on this. It's going to go up through the system and end up in the Supreme Court. I think the constitutionality of the act is in great doubt, but there's a process to be worked through. So, again, my comments are in front of you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Madam Chair, Medicare is mandatory. Young people today starting out will probably pay into it for 40 to 50 years before they collect a dime. What is the rationale behind Obamacare being unconstitutional and Medicare being constitutional? They're both mandates. I guess I don't understand how Obamacare could be unconstitutional because of the mandates and Medicare not.
Madam Chair and
Ms. Crockett.
Judge Vinson ruled, and actually another judge in the case, in a separate case, is that the individual mandate itself requiring you to purchase, you're saying you don't see the distinction between requiring me to purchase, for example, health care and Medicare. All I can tell you is that under the Commerce Clause, what scholars are saying and what the judge said is that it is a form of inactivity and that Congress simply does not have the power under our Constitution to do that. The state of Minnesota does, by the way, just like Massachusetts did under Romney Care, but the federal government simply does not.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Langseth. I'll take a stab at this. I'm not as qualified, perhaps, as Ms. Crockett to say I'm a constitutional attorney, but as I understand it, Medicare is a tax, and the power of the Congress to tax uniformly is clear in the Constitution. What is being proposed under the Obamacare structure is not a tax and is not applied uniformly. And that what it does imply is that people are required to enter into a commercial transaction. That's the difference. The power of Congress to tax is clear. That is constitutional, and Medicare qualifies as a tax, but this does not, and that is a difference.
Any other questions for Ms. Crockett? Okay,
thank you.
Is Evan from the Freedom Foundation here? Is there any more discussion about the bill? If not, a motion would be in order, Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, members, I move that Senate File 33 be passed and referred to the floor.
Senator Hand moves that Senate File 33 be recommended to pass to the floor. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? No.
No.
Okay. The motion does prevail.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay. Thank you, members. We do have a session tomorrow. We're going to have management and budget back to finish.